Raptors show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Liu, and I'm joined by my producer and co-host, Alex Wong. It's Friday, which means we are taking phone calls on everything Raptors related. Give us a call at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 star 590. Alex, what's going on?
What's up, man? I'm following this final cuts. You know, the Raptors, apparently Nick Nurse just said after practice today that it's going to come down to the buzzer, that Monday is the deadline. So I guess Sam Dekker, Ish Wainwright, and Isak Bonga is going to have to just spend the weekend fighting it out for the spots. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, is it heartbreaking? Yeah, because I was watching their interviews yesterday, and they got all three of them to come to the podium.
Which was kind of weird, to be honest.
Yeah, it was. But they got all three of them to come to the podium, and obviously only two will remain on the team. Honestly, maybe even one will remain on the team. That's another option.
This is, I mean, not to burn the joke into the ground. This is another Squid Game situation.
Yeah. No, this is literally them at the final table. And I'm not going to spoil who it is, but it's not looking good for one of them.
How did you feel about those interviews? Because obviously there was a lot of good vibes that came out of it, right? Everybody seemed very supportive of each other.
What are they supposed to say? I mean, hope I'm picked and the other guy isn't.
Well, Sam Dekker had the quote that he's not rooting for other people to fail, right? Like, that's not.
I believe them too. It's just, you know, what else are they really?
It's okay to root for some people to fail if you're fighting for the same thing. You don't think so?
That's why you're Sang-woo, man.
We're going to pretend we live in a utopia? Is that what we're going to do?
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay, wow. You're really giving the Sang-woo speech.
I'm dark today. Yeah. It's a dark Friday. Freddie Gillespie, Reggie Perry were waived earlier this week.
Yeah, I saw some complaints that we did not spend enough time talking about them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Give me 30 seconds on Reggie Perry. Go. Oh, man. We got to play music?
Have to play some music. I don't know. He was always destined to go to the 905. So that one is not surprising whatsoever. You know, I guess the Raptors want to see what they can develop him into, or at least sort of see how he grows in the 905 system. But that's not somebody I expect to be on the team. Even Freddie Gillespie, I thought he had a chance to make it just because the Raptors had such little depth at center. But he did not play well. I don't know what else to say other than he did not play well. So he's not on the team either.
Yeah. These are all, you know, most of them are great guys, I believe.
All of them great dudes, man.
All of them great dudes.
There's no Malcolm Miller situation where someone's a great dude on the team for 3 years.
Views are yours, not mine. But yeah, like, it's going to be tough. What are they going to do this weekend? Should they set up competitions? Like, make Sam Dekker come in, see if he can make 800 threes in a row? Like,
they've been on the team since, like, August. Like, Dekker was signed in August, you know? I guess Bonga joined them a little bit later, but what else is left for them to compete in? Like, do you think they're, like, playing tug-of-war for their life or something? You know, like, are they playing marbles right now? Like, what's happening?
We're retiring all Squid Game jokes.
No, we're not.
After today. But clearly, I think the Raptors, it's a tough decision right now. Because I do feel like if they knew who they were going to take, they're not going to drag this out.
Yeah, it's a tough decision also personally, too, because I think these guys are all people that will contribute to the culture of the team. Like, when you heard Sam Dekker go up there and speak and how, like, earnest he was, I think he's really gotten along with a lot of the guys. Ish is a guy we already knew that about from Summer League. You know, his story is how incredible that is and sort of, like, the situation that he finds himself in. Bonga also seems like a guy who brings great vibes, you know. So
we're just down to vibes now?
It's a 15th roster spot. If it's not vibes, what is it about? He's not going to play.
Man, we really spent 5 minutes on this, man. Shouts to me and you. Ish Wainwright, I'm going to declare as the favorite.
Why?
Just vibes. like you said. Yeah. This is what you come here for, 2 to 3 p.m. Yeah. every day.
This is why people got to call in, so we don't have to say the word vibes.
Raptors analysis.
I mean, look, I've already said that I think Bonga is in the lead, absolutely. He's a guy who has played with the actual rotational players in preseason, and if that tells you anything, that does say that he's in the lead. Sam Dekker obviously had that great last game, and honestly, Ish hasn't shown all that much throughout preseason, but I really liked what he did in Summer League. So, you know, I wouldn't really be surprised if either one of Ish or Dekker is the one that ends up getting cut, but I would be surprised if Bonga gets cut. That's where I'm at with that. So,
what else happened this week that we didn't get a chance to catch up on? Let's see.
Well, they're saying we're unprofessional for the ones. One person said we're unprofessional, but I'm going to say they and now turn this into a whole thing. But They were just like, why were you guys talking about Squid Game in your life? And I'm like, look, have you talked on a public radio station for a whole hour of your entire day, every single day? Not that much happens, you know?
Responding to people is your thing. You know I don't respond to people.
Okay.
Drake said on a Raptors broadcast earlier this week that Kawhi misses the fans and is really grateful for his time in Toronto.
Yep.
So as kids from your generation would say, is that cap?
Why did you say it like that? My God, what's wrong?
I'm trying to appeal to the younger generation. Cap or no cap?
I'm going to say that is cap.
Wow. Yeah. So you don't think Kawhi said that to Drake? Because Drake is relaying the message.
You know, as you're learning about me in this past like 2 weeks, I love lying. Like, you know, like even spots that don't even call for a white lie, I'll just give one anyway, just to like practice. And I think Drake might be similar.
You know, that's fair.
Yeah.
I think Kawhi did enjoy his time here.
I'm sure he did, but you know, I'm sure he has lots of love for the Raptor fans. I don't doubt that for a minute. And honestly, if you play for the Clippers, you don't even have fans. So yeah, you probably just miss fans in general. They were playing playoff games with the cardboard cutouts. Remember that game? There are a lot of cardboard cutouts, but I don't know. I somehow don't fully believe it. And listen, I don't even want to hear it. That's the most important thing. If you missed the fans that much, you should have stayed.
Yeah, why would you show it to me if I can't have it?
That's exactly right.
We have some callers.
Okay, go ahead.
John Ng from Mississauga. I think this is Jonathan Ng.
Wow. Hello, John.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's going on, John? What's good?
You don't have to say my full name on radio. But...
Oh, sorry.
No, say his government name, please. Go ahead, flame him.
John's my close friend. Close friends get VIP access, apparently. What's going on, John? What's your question?
Yeah, big fan of the show, and congrats to you both also. So for last year, we saw Freddie and Malachi getting initiated with the Party in the USA sing-along. Just curious from your thoughts, what do you think the rookie initiation will be for this year for Delano and Scotty, and I guess and David Johnson as well?
Yeah, the initiation would be they have to drive the whole team, drive a bus to Niagara Falls.
Safeway tour style.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
What else, though?
Who on the team is going to be able to speak English, French, Cantonese, Mandarin at the same time?
Yeah.
That's the essential skill.
No, that is a roadblock.
That is a little tough.
Bring back Serge Ibaka and Jeremy Lin. How about that?
They might have it covered. I don't actually, yeah.
What is a good initiation? Like something to do in the city?
Okay, so I find the backpacks kind of thing a little bit corny.
Yeah.
You know, like it's been overdone, and B, like, you know, it kind of speaks, the joke is, oh, look, we're effeminizing men, which I just don't think is much of a joke, period. It's not funny to me. But I do think that these sing-alongs are really fun, but I want to see more of them. I don't want to just see them sing one song.
You want them at an actual karaoke setup.
I want them to go to KTV or Echo Karaoke or something like that, and just, like, the whole time. Because, listen, that's, like, the best activity socially is to go out and sing karaoke. So, and I honestly want them to pick their own songs too, because I want them to get into it. Because, you know, like with Party in the USA, Malachi Flynn just kind of stepped back. He was literally like, oh, I'm gonna fake the shot and then I'm gonna pass it off to Freddie and Freddie's gonna ISO, and he did a great job. But I want to see them pick their own songs, feel comfortable in their own skin and sing that, and honestly have a whole open gym episode where it's just Chris Tucker singing for the triads.
Yeah, you've seen me, we've been to karaoke.
Yeah, you're the triads.
I like Coldplay.
Yeah.
Michelle Branch is good.
You have a lot of Ja Rule in your bag.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, a lot of Ja Rule in your bag. Yeah, you got the voice down.
Like, yeah, no, I have the voice down, all of that. No, I think karaoke would be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I want them to
pick their own songs, and I want it to be like a half an hour kind of event, not just like they sing one song, you know?
No, for sure. All right, who's our next caller? Paul from Oakville.
Paul, what's going on? All right,
we're on a slight delay.
Yeah, we're on a slight delay.
Paul, what's going on, man?
Oh yeah, my question is, so in the I listened to the last podcast, and Will, you mentioned something about the Raptors' identity being positionless, and you mentioned that one particular play where Scotty defended Jason Tatum and then dunked the ball. And I just thought about Masai's vision for the future. And maybe I'm being too optimistic when I say this. It's just that with the Raptors' development and how they're known for it, I feel like we in 2 years or so with the Delano, Scotty, and Precious, we could potentially be light years ahead of the league. Because with the Raptors' development, would you think that we could potentially have multiple Kawhis and Giannis's who can be elite defenders and can create their own shots, except even way better? Because I feel like Masai and Bobby are getting players who can already play make. And do you think we can have like a four future All-Stars, like the one with the Golden State Warriors when they had KD, Clay, Steph, and Draymond?
Yeah, look, I think that'd be ideal. The point about the Warriors is interesting because the Raptors are it's a similar style in terms of what the Warriors did defensively in the fact that they had all these, the Warriors famously had their death lineup that was like outside of Steph Curry, everybody was like 6'6 and long-armed and you got Draymond and KD in the middle, and those guys can pretty much guard anybody, but also just, like, really strong wing defenders. You know, when you're talking about Iguodala or even Sean Livingston, when he was a little bit younger. I think four All-Stars from this current roster seems a little optimistic to me. I think there are four guys that maybe at some point in their careers will be All-Stars in their own seasons, and I truly believe that. Obviously, Pascal has already done it once. I could see Fred, honestly, making an All-Star this year based on how well the Raptors play. OG's clearly taking a leap, and I think that if not this year, maybe even next year for OG. And I think Scotty down the line is a guy that I could see being an All-Star. I don't know if I see all four guys being an All-Star at the same time, like the way the Warriors had. You kind of need really dynamic offensive players, and the Raptors don't have the scoring skill set necessarily to get four guys at the All-Star game currently. But I think the other thing is once you make the strategy of sort of playing positionless and getting these guys that are able to guard 1 through 5 and can play make and hopefully shoot and things like that. I think the other thing that's nice is that when the Raptors need to go trade for the next Kawhi trade where someone is clearly an excellent player, but they're available for one reason or another, you can make those kind of trades because the most valuable assets, are outside of, I guess, number one picks is these 6'9" forwards who can do all these things. Like every team wants them. So it almost makes sense to collect that because eventually what you'll see with the Raptors is that they'll collect these players, develop the players, and then some of them they'll keep, but some of them they'll end up trading because that's really how the Raptors built their last championship team. And when they do that around this time around, I like the number of players in the team that could be used in a trade asset. Like if I were a team like Philadelphia, for example, with Ben Simmons right now, I would be looking to call the Raptors, for example, because I think it's they have pieces that a lot of teams would want. So I'm not sure if that answered your question specifically, but the vision of the team makes a lot of sense to me. So, all right, let's go to our next caller then. We got Stephanie from the Hammer. Wow, Hamilton, what's going on?
That's a great introduction. Hey guys, congrats on the show.
Thank you.
Okay, so I want to know about Earl Watson Jr. because I was really excited when he first was coming to the Raptors, and then I've heard nothing about him. I don't think he's done an interview. Is he going to come in and actually make an impact on Hamilton or on the Raptors, sorry? Or is he going to be like a Chris Finch, come in and just kind of move on to his next job kind of thing?
I think the one time we've heard him mentioned, Earl Watson, is with Delano Benton specifically. Me and Alex spoke to Delano yesterday and sort of talked to him about what they're working on. And I think the nice thing with Earl is that he's a really good developmental coach in the sense that he's worked with players firsthand. We've seen him work out with Raptors in the past when he wasn't necessarily officially a coach with the Raptors at the Rico Hines runs that they play in LA and stuff. And so, with Earl, he's a really experienced point guard. Wasn't an all-star in this league, but carved out a really long career for himself. And he's really just trying to pass on some of those skills to the guys on the team. So we've heard about him trying to speed up Delano and get him to play faster. That makes sense. And honestly, based on what we've seen so far, Delano has looked really nice when he's in transition, playing fast and getting downhill. He's creating open shots for other guys. And I think that that's part of what you bring Earl in for. It is in a way similar to when the Raptors brought in Phil Handy as well for the championship season. You know, he was also a guy who was known for working with players directly and sort of improving their games. And I also think that for Earl, you know, as a former head coach, I do think that that's probably his goal, once again, to become a former head coach. And if he does, I think that's something Nick will embrace, because that's what you want to do, is you want to be a coach that also develops other coaches. I know it can, maybe takes a bit of a hit for the actual roster itself in terms of the coaching staff, but it also raises your profile a ton, because ultimately people get into this business. I mean, there's only 30 coaches in the NBA. If Nick could produce assistant coaches that eventually become head coaches, and at one point, you know, they had Nate and they had, you know, Chris Finch last year, that's a really nice feather in Nick's cap. And I think that helps the Raptors attract more coaching talent. So I think you'll hear from Earl. If you want to hear from Earl's perspective, he's been on different podcasts and things like that. I remember listening to like a 2-hour interview he did with Baron Davis. That was a really good podcast. So if you want to get to know Earl, I think maybe listen to that episode.
Yeah, I've heard some things about him, but I haven't really got his perspective on the Raptors or why he chose to come to the Raptors or anything. So I just was curious about your thoughts. Can I ask another question?
Of course. Go ahead.
Okay, so Nate is also back. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but in the last game, in like one of the few last plays, like he was the guy actually calling the play for the team. So how is that okay? Like, I feel bad for the guy from Australia who comes to, you know, thinks he's going to get an opportunity as a coach and then kind of gets pushed to the side for Nate. And like, how is he getting paid from Indiana to coach for us, you know?
Well, generally speaking, with NBA contracts, like, they're all guaranteed. So if you lay a guy off like the way Indiana did with Nate, he's still getting paid. And so I think if he takes another job, I'm not sure about this, so I'm just speculating.
Okay.
But if he takes another job with another team, I think that like the difference is paid off by the other team. So like he still gets the same amount of money, but then like he doesn't get, like, if, let's say he's getting paid $3 million
from Indiana. But the Raptors aren't paying him yet, or they would have said something, right?
That's why he's a consultant, but I think he's probably working for the Raptors, but getting paid by Indiana. It's actually kind of funny, I think. But I mean, honestly, I understand that. Look, the reporting around what happened with Nate in Indiana clearly didn't work out. Some of the reporting was really unflattering. Based on what he did with the Raptors in the two seasons before that, he was obviously a guy that's worked with Nick very closely, like literally the two of them working together in like Iowa, you know, Nick's favorite place in the world. Outside of Birmingham, England. So, like, he's a guy that Nick trusts as his right-hand man. And, of course, there's always going to be a spot for Nate on Nick's staff. The players always liked him. Like, Fred always spoke so highly of Nate as well. He seemed to always gel with the players and stuff. So, I'm not surprised that he's back, to be honest.
Yeah, and I'll add to that point, to your question, Stephanie, is, you know, remember last season, the final game of the year, it was Raptors against the Pacers in Tampa. And that was when a lot of the reporting had already come out. And it was, you know, believed that, you know, Nate Bergeron's run as head coach in Indiana was going to be over. And Nick, and I believe Masai as well, you know, made a gesture to come on the court and actually embrace
and hug him.
Yeah. And hug Nate and as a show of support. So while I think, you know, the reporting from Indiana and everything that happened there with him as a head coach, you know, I don't think there's any denying that, you know, those things did happen during his 1 year there. I think he's got a pretty solid standing with the Raptors still. You know, he was part of the championship coaching staff. And obviously, like Will mentioned, he's got a very long relationship with Nick going back. And some of the players like Fred, like Pascal, like OG are familiar with him. So, you know, again, like you're correct to ask about the clarity of the role, you know, what he is as a consultant. But I definitely think the Raptors are trying to integrate him back, you know, into being part of this coaching staff moving forward.
Okay. Okay. Well, thanks, guys. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to probably, honestly, I'm biased, but my favorite caller, Vitaly from Moscow. Vitaly, what's going on?
Excellent. You guys can hear me okay?
We can hear you loud and clear, buddy. What's going on, man?
I'm loving the daily podcast, loving all the new personalities and characters that you're having on your show. Shout out to Faisal and Danielle. I really enjoyed that show.
Wow. Wasn't too unprofessional for you? No.
It's my style. It took me back. It took me back.
Good.
And most especially, I really liked the interview you did with Matt Devlin. Loved hearing his story. And he kind of talked about his origin in advancing in broadcasting. I wanted to ask both of you. You've advanced quite a bit somewhat recently, and it's great to see how far you've come. And could you maybe just talk about a couple of key points, what it took for you to advance and for you to continue to grow in as a journalist, as a radio broadcaster now?
Alex, go ahead, man. You had a different story, because I graduated school and I needed something to do, and I went into sports journalism. I think there's more steps along the way, but Alex had a whole other life and career, so.
Yeah, you know, I went to school for business. I was a chartered accountant, and I worked in that industry.
Breaking barriers, Alex.
For seven, as 8 years. An Asian. I don't know if my former bosses at Ernst & Young are listening, shout outs. But yeah, you know, I broke into this industry, you know, as a freelancer for a very long time, and, you know, advice and stuff, you know, the thing I would always tell people is that, you know, there just has to be a certain level of just confidence and relentlessness in terms of pursuing the things that you want to do. I think, you know, when I talk to a lot of young writers out there who are trying to make it in the industry, I feel like a lot of people want to just skip steps and, you know, figure out, how do I get to the game? You know, how do I, you know, cover an NBA game, be at a Raptors game, or like be able to interview, you know, players on the team and things like that. But it's about honing your craft. It's about building connections. And it's about figuring out what specifically you want to do too. You know, I think a lot of young writers, when they reach out to me, the first thing I always ask them is, you know, what specifically do you actually want to do? Because people say, I want to cover the NBA. I want to write about basketball. But how do you want to write about it? How do you want to cover it? How are you going to differentiate yourself? So I think those are the really important things. And I do think, you know, it's important to make good connections in this industry. Even though I think people probably look at Will and I as maybe two people who have, you know, made it or, you know, been solidified in this industry, we face a lot of challenges on a daily basis. And when we talk about a lot of that privately, because a lot of those conversations are more constructive privately, but the sports media landscape is very difficult. And honestly, you know, if I'm being honest, as two Asians, we've dealt with a lot of stuff. We continue to deal with a lot of stuff. And, you know, maybe there is a platform even on this show at some point for us to actually have those open conversations. But one of the things I encourage young writers to do is don't be discouraged. Reach out to people like Will and myself. I'm always open to doing formal and informal mentorships with people. So the thing with me is make connections and just, you know, figure out exactly what you want to do. Because, you know, once you figure out what kind of writer or what kind of broadcaster or what kind of radio voice you want to be, I think it just makes everything else a lot clearer.
Yeah, wow, okay. I wasn't expecting that, Alex, but I support everything you said, absolutely. I think, honestly, for me, like, I've told the story so many times, but, you know, I was coming out of school, so I wanted to do something that I thought was interesting and also, like, worthy of just spending a lot of time on something. And to be honest, I was just like, look, I really like the Raptors. I would like to cover the Raptors somewhere down the line, but to be honest, if I could just work in sports media at first, I think that was my goal. And, you know, I was writing at Raptors Republic mostly because I literally was like begging Blake and trying to like hunt down his email and going on the On Deck Circle, which is Blake's old website. That's why there's ODC in Blake's Twitter handle. It stands for On Deck Circle. And, you know, eventually got connected to Blake, you know, started writing for Raptors Republic. Then Blake was working at the Score and there was an opportunity there. And he's like, look, you know, I can give you a bit of a reference. And at the time I had like literally nobody to reference. I needed two references. So I think I asked Eric Kareen to write me a reference, even though I never met the guy. He had only shared one of my articles one time. And I was like, hey, Eric, you shared this article this one time. Can you write me a review? And he's like, I don't know you at all, Will, but I will write you a two sentence recommendation based on that. And you kind of just like go forward from there. And I was lucky to latch on the Score. And then that turned into a nice opportunity to sort of get a, you know, sort of take care of myself sort of day to day. But I also wanted to do Raptors coverage. And I kind of had to do that myself in terms of starting a podcast, like the Raptors Reaction Podcast, and starting something like 10 Things, which I literally just wrote on a screen cap and posted online. And these things kind of like gain popularity because the Raptors fan base is tremendous and you guys are incredibly supportive. Like, I always feel like I'm always standing on the shoulders of giants and not just the forgettable Oasis album. I genuinely feel so supported by the Raptors fan base. And it just kind of went from there. And then at some point you need somebody to notice you. And I think the big man DT obviously saw the vision over at Yahoo. And he also, you know, brought me over here eventually to Sportsnet. And so you really need to catch a lot of breaks. But honestly, there's so many hours of work that goes into it beforehand, and you're kind of like writing and speaking into the void for a long time until it happens. And then when you're there, the only thing you really want to do, at least for me, is just keep the door open for everyone else, like Alex said, because it is a difficult industry. It's treacherous. And if you can help other people do any way you can, you do it. So, and I think Matt Demo will tell you the same thing, to be honest.
It's wonderful. I didn't expect such insightful answers. I really appreciate it. You know, I would mirror the same. Before I got into agriculture, I talked to a lot of people, and when they ask for advice, they say, how do I open another farm? First, you have to milk the cow. First, you have to feed the horse. Everybody wants to open another farm, but not many people want to enjoy the process of milking the cow. So yeah. I think maybe this analogy not perfect, but very inspiring. And I appreciate the answer. Just last thing, you guys know, I bleed Russian red. I'm CSKA Moskva all day, but
okay.
I'm kind of an honorary Canadian now. So very quick, just shout out Team Canada, shout out Alfonso Davies.
Yep.
Really, really enjoyed it. I don't know if you guys been following a lot, but
I was at the game, Vitaly.
He was at BMO Field, Alex, the diehard a footy fan. Yep.
What was the atmosphere like?
It was incredible. You know, shout out to you. You shouted out Faisal Kamisa earlier. You know, he had tickets. He had an extra ticket. So I joined him and his friends. And, you know, I'm not a huge soccer fan, but the atmosphere was incredible just to see the passion of the fans. And shouts to the CONCACAF referees. I didn't know.
Shouts to them.
I didn't know these qualifying matches are basically like wrestling matches, but there's a lot of passion, you know, and excitement about Team Canada. And I think that's great, you know, no matter what sport it is. You know, I think obviously hockey is king here, but, you know, you see the support behind the basketball teams, the men's and the women's, and, you know, soccer as well. So I think anytime you get to kind of have that collective national pride with this team, you know, it's I think it's a great thing.
All right.
Definitely. And, I look forward to speaking to you guys soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Vitaly. We appreciate you. So let's go to Rick from Stouffville. What's going on, Rick?
Hello?
Yeah, Rick, what's going on? You want to talk about Precious?
Yes. So I've been watching. I didn't see much of Summer League, but I was watching the Wizards game the other day, and I'm looking at Precious, and I'm thinking, my God, the package, the size, the athletic ability, the demeanor, the don't take any crap attitude, and the skill set of this guy, it's screaming, minutes. Give me minutes, and I will be a future all-star. Am I crazy or what?
I mean, he does a lot of things that I didn't expect based on watching his play in Miami.
I think his skill set is more developed than Pascal was at 22.
I mean, honestly, they're similar types of players at this age. I think the one thing Pascal was able to develop into was sort of he was able to refine a couple of things, develop a go-to move, right? As much as we clown the spin move or whatever, it clearly works. That's why he spins so much. And I think Precious has the talent and the ability, as you mentioned, in terms of how quick he is at his size and how fast he is in transition and things like that, that he can be on that same trajectory and that same level. Honestly, if you're talking about just raw talent in terms of which guy has the most raw talent in the team, I think Precious has to be top three just based on the fact that he can handle the ball at that size, move at that speed, play with physicality in the paint as well. I mean, and of course the developing jumper. I would say the jumper is still like a work in progress, not in the sense that it's broken or anything. It just needs to find more consistency with it. But if he could ever knock down that jumper as well, and we saw like the first game, you know, in preseason, he got Joel Embiid on him. He's like, okay, I'm not going to take Embiid to the basket. That guy's huge. I'm going to step back for three. How many, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's just not a lot of centers that can step back for three.
Absolutely. I think when he develops that shot and gets that confidence, it's just going to open up a whole world of possibilities for him on the offensive end. And I think his motor will make him a defensive beast. I'm looking at this guy to be most improved, fifth man, or all-star in the next 3 or 4 years at least. And Pascal's got to work on that spin. That spin move is just, he just played that to death.
You would need another move to go to, I would say.
Absolutely. He needs a counter, man.
Yeah.
Sometimes
that's fair.
He misses the entire backboard with that spin. So, yeah, he's got to work on that.
Well, I still think Pascal Spindler is still pretty effective, but I do think that teams know that it's coming now, so
yeah,
they're sitting on it a little bit.
Everybody knows it's coming. Everybody knows it's coming.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I hear that. So, but yeah, I think, look, Precious is going to be really exciting. I would say don't expect it all to happen at once, though, because I think this season he's probably still going
to
split time with Kembridge.
He needs the minutes on the floor. He really does. I don't think he was getting that in Miami, and I think it may have stunted his growth a little bit, but I think if you give him regular minutes, he knows he's going to play. I think you're going to unleash something amazing in this guy. I think his potential is just unlimited.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm really happy with the Precious return from the Kyle. I mean, no one's going to be Kyle, right? But you were going to lose Kyle anyway in a sign and trade to essentially get Precious.
Do you think the Raptors were asking for Precious?
Absolutely. You know Masai's connection to Precious.
I think they wanted Precious. I think they wanted Precious. I don't think they wanted Tyler Hero. I think they wanted Precious.
In terms of which guys fit the style that the Raptors are trying to build, I think Precious fits that more. Honestly, Tyler's a very talented player as well. I would have loved to get both.
Absolutely.
I would love to get both, but, you know, you can't get everything. So.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. All right, good talking to you guys.
All right, thank you. Precious is... he's been a really pleasant surprise. Like, top two along with Scotty so far.
There's a lot of buzz right now. And I think rightfully so. And I think that's why a lot of people, and maybe not everyone, but I am, and I feel like we did some, you know, roundtables this week with different guests. I think there is a growing optimism about this team. Maybe a quiet optimism.
Yeah, we're talking everybody into this team. That's what the show is, the propaganda hour.
This is all I know how to do.
With me and Alex. All right, let's go to Sammy from Ottawa. Wants to talk about which player would most likely make the All-Star team. Sammy.
Hello, can you guys hear me?
We can hear you.
First off, huge fan of you guys. The content has been fantastic. I love the interview with Matt Devlin, and I liked hearing about your guys' journey in the sports media industry. Now for the question, I want to know what you guys think about who is most likely to make an All-Star appearance on the Raptors. I think for me, like from what I know or what I see, I think Pascal, OG, and Fred are like – kind of like the top three that I think could make the All-Star team. Because OG, like we've seen a lot of progression in his game. Fred, he was super close last year. And then Pascal, obviously, he's shown a lot in the past. And he's had that kind of achievement before. And I think if his three bounces back a little bit, the three-point shot, maybe, I mean, it'll be a lot easier for him to show off his like skill set. And the follow-up question to that, I know it's kind of a loaded question, but can OG and Pascal emulate the kind of dynamics that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have on the Boston Celtics because of like kind of like their physical attributes and like their defense and that, especially if OG makes that jump?
All right, Alex, why don't you take the All-Star and I'll take the Celtics comparison.
Sure, yeah. The All-Star for me, I would pick Fred because I think Fred was already playing at an All-Star level last season. And, you know, injuries and COVID got in the way. And I think the fact that Kyle not being here this season and, you know, Fred being the clear starting point guard and the fact that there are some point guards, well, there's one, Kyrie Irving, that might not be available this season. I think it opens up a spot on the All-Star team. I do think, though, Sammy, like you said, OG and Pascal, you know, definitely could make cases for being on the All-Star team because OG's got a lot of buzz about him, you know, in terms of being a most improved player or a player that's going to make the leap. And Pascal, I mean, he was torn down so much last season that if he comes back and plays at the same level, puts up the same numbers as two seasons ago, there's a narrative case there as well. But if you were asking me to pick, I would pick Fred. And I do think Fred will make the All-Star team this season.
Yeah, it really comes down to, like, if the team success is going to be there too, right?
Yeah, because the winning.
If you're not on a winning team, it's almost impossible for you to make All-Star. I remember Trae Young was, like, I don't know, 28-10 or something like that. Like, numbers were definitely eye-popping, and it was still hard for him to get in as a reserve because he was playing for a Hawks team at the time wasn't winning, and, of course, we've seen what he's done since. And to your other question, and before we get to the other question, I want to remind people that you can call us at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590, *590. You can call into the show every Friday. In terms of your other question, for OG and Pascal versus sort of Tatum and Brown, I think, well, two things. Tatum and Brown are really good shooters, and both of them are really good shooters. Brown developed himself into one. Tatum was sort of always a pretty good shooter, even in college, and definitely has expanded that in the NBA. That is going to give you a huge advantage, especially in the modern game. Whereas the Raptors, with OG and Pascal, first off, they came in as second, or not second round picks, but late first round picks, both picked in the 20s as compared to like top five picks. But also B, like, they came in as guys who, in Pascal's case, not a shooter, and in OG's case, a very limited shooter. And so they're sort of catching up from that end. I think in terms of like physical ability and things like that, honestly, they're all four of the guys are pretty top tier in terms of, you would consider all four of them elite athletes at the wing position based on their size and what they can do physically. But that the shooting is the big component there. And I think that that's what especially distinguishes Tatum and Brown from Pascal and OG, is the fact that those guys can shoot so well. I think, you know, the advantage you may be able to sort of give the Raptors in terms of edge is like, okay, Pascal is more of a post game than some of those other guys. And, you know, OG might be the strongest player of the four and things like that. But until the shooting sort of even comes close to being equal or matched up, like, that's always going to be a little bit difficult. So I would say, though, that it hurts me to say all of this because I really despise the Celtics. And I don't like saying nice things about their players, but I think realistically those two guys are cut above at the moment. And honestly, though, in terms of emulating them, it's not like the Celtics are doing all that much with them right now anyway. So that's all I will say. But at the moment, they are in the lead.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I honestly couldn't agree more. And also, I one last thing before I go.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've been following the show for a while. I don't remember if I have this right, but Alex, did you ever mention that you went to the University of Ottawa?
No. Sorry, my mic was off. No, I went to University of Toronto, not Ottawa.
Ah, okay. Whatever then. I remember one of the Stanley suggestions was like an Ottawa spot. I was like, yeah.
That was back with Josh. Josh went to Carleton, I think.
Oh, okay. That's cool. All right, then. Well, thank you guys very much. Good luck with all the other callers, and have a great weekend.
All right. Appreciate the call, Sammy.
Man, I want to talk about the Boston Celtics.
Okay. Why?
Because I feel like every time I read something or listen to something, Celtics getting this quiet buzz about them, that they can play all these different lineups now.
Mm.
That, you know, Dennis Schroeder is such a great pickup. Robert Williams, you know, underrated player. When I look at the roster compared to the Raptors, I don't know, man. You don't think the Raptors could be whatever the people say the Celtics are going to be this season? I'm just asking the questions.
I actually kind of feel optimistic about the Celtics roster construction. But what I hear you about this in terms of the hype around the Celtics every year is, I would say, what percentage of the NBA in terms of the top tier reporters and things like that, what percentage of them do you think are from the New England area?
No, that's fair.
Like a quarter, a third?
That's fair.
Imagine if, like, I don't know, Zach Lowe's from Toronto. Bill Simmons is from Toronto.
No, that's fair. I try to avoid the U.S. Canada,
just from Toronto,
media bias.
You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, we would hear Toronto every day, every week.
Yeah, no,
you know what I'm saying?
You.
We would hear, oh, Toronto's going to win 67 games, and Kyrie's going to be laughing on the bench with Jason, you know, and
I'm just saying, you want to talk about diversity using different lineups?
Oh, I thought you just want to talk about diversity in general, which I think we know that conversation.
We'll definitely get to that at some point.
All right.
But I just, don't the Raptors have all that too?
They do, but they don't have like the elite talent. And I think Jason Tatum is elite talent.
Yeah.
But unfortunately.
I agree with that. But when you look at the overall roster.
Yeah, the supporting cast is comparable. If honestly, the Raptors are probably deeper than the Celtics in supporting cast. If you're comparing like who is 3 through 10 in the rotation. But when you're comparing the top like two players, I would say that Pascal and Jaylen Brown are roughly equivalent. And then Tatum is just better than anyone the Raptors have. Unfortunately, I hate saying this. Why are we bringing this conversation
because
up?
Because
I don't like this.
All I'm saying is Raptors are going to finish better record than the Celtics.
Okay, fair enough. All right, let's go to Adam from Huntsville. Wants to talk about the big three for the Raptors being a step behind. So you must agree with me on this front.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
We're doing well, man. How are you doing?
Doing awesome. Number one, congratulations on the new radio show. The podcast was awesome. So, huge step up, and I'm in the car every day, so really, really excited to listen to you guys all the time.
Thank you.
I guess the question, I didn't ask it very well, obviously, to the guy beforehand. I'm wondering, just to get your take, it felt like, you know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, whenever it was, we had DeMar and Kyle kind of come in, run the show, and kind of kick this era of Raptors basketball off. You're looking to the future. You have Precious. I guess OG would be in this crowd, too, because he's 22 or 23 years old. And Scotty, do you feel like, even though we love Pascal and Fred as much as we do, that these guys are kind of a stopgap, kind of a holdover, despite all their success, despite Fred getting a Finals MVP vote and Pascal taking all the leaps and bounds that he's taken? Do you think that they are, again, just a stopgap between what was before and what is coming next?
I think that's a good question. And the only thing I will say, really, is that calling them stopgap sounds really negative, but to be honest, in reality, like 90% of the NBA are stopgaps. Unless you have this is a game of basketball, right? It's not like other sports. Basketball is a sport that has so many possessions, which means that there is very little randomness that can really determine how a basketball game is decided because there's so many possessions. It's not like hockey or even soccer where one goal can flip the whole game and everything like that. And then you have players that affect both sides of the ball. So it's not like baseball, I guess, except for Shohei Ohtani. But like in baseball, players only play one half of the game. Basketball, one player can play so much of the game. It's almost at a certain level, especially in the playoffs, it's almost like watching a tennis match. It's almost mano a mano. And so I think unless you have one of these top five players, and I mean top five, like I mean Kawhi Leonard is probably the worst out of these five players that you need to have in your team to win a championship. It's just not going to work. So everyone else in the NBA is essentially stopgap players that get flipped and back and forth. And if you're honestly, even with the Kyle and DeMar era, they were very successful in the regular season, but of course they ran into issues in the playoffs. And even a guy like DeMar, who's the franchise leader in scoring and all these other great things about DeMar and made all the All-Star teams, put in such a great shift for the Raptors over like almost a decade, he gets flipped, right? And you can look back in hindsight and you say, well, the Raptors were kind of doing what they could until the right moment came, and they took on one of these top five players. And so, yeah, Pascal and Fred are probably in the same boat. But that's what the majority of the league is in, right? So you're always trying to find that top-end talent. And, yeah, the Raptors don't have that right now, but I honestly think that, like, this is the case for so many other NBA teams. What you want to do in the meantime, though, of course, is to establish a winning culture, to be a place that's known for improving players, to be a place that can help players grow. And we've seen a lot of those cases with the Raptors. And your ideal situation is you grow one of these players organically into those top five players. And that is very hard to do because there's only so much talent in the NBA. And the Raptors have only picked, I mean, they got Scotty this year. I mean, that was like the second or third time the Raptors have had the fourth pick in their 26 year history. Like, that's probably where you're going to have to go to get some of these guys. And then you from there, you just have to develop them. But for the moment, I don't really feel that awkward about the Raptors' positioning. Mostly because, look, if the Raptors end up trading some of these guys, I think the trade value for a lot of the players on the Raptors is decently high. Like, if I were another team looking at what the Raptors have, I would want to trade for quite a number of these pieces.
Hey, I'm on board with you. Frankly, I thought you're over on their win total. So, I think these guys are going to be great. Thanks again for the opinion and taking the call, and enjoy your day.
All right, thank you.
I think stopgap is a bit too harsh for some of these guys, though. Like, when you're talking about, like, even Fred, Pascal, OG. Like, Pascal was a number two player on a championship team.
Yeah, Fred.
Fred, we know what Fred did. We don't need to rehash this. Yeah. And I totally get what the caller was saying, but I almost feel like the Raptors maybe are not that far away from being in that position where you're saying they're one player away from contention. Serious contention. It's a hard, but that's the hardest bridge to cross, right?
It
like
is.
The Kawhi Leonard thing was such a, I don't even, like, how would you call it? Like, it wasn't a fluke, but that's hard to replicate, like, all the circumstances.
Yeah, you really had to have a lot of circumstances come together. And the only thing you could really do is, like, have a lot of players and picks or whatever you want. Just have a lot of attractive players on your team for when that moment comes. And I think that's what the Raptors are building towards once again. Because we all know a free agency is not an option for the Raptors. I was asked this earlier by Joe Wolfon, one of the two hosts of Pound the Rock. Congrats to the Pound the Rock crew for 200 episodes. great honor that I came on for episode 200 and turned 90% of that podcast into the Raptors talk. But, you know, Wolfon asked me, who is the best Raptors free agent signing? And I'm going to ask you that same question, Alex.
I can't, man. You're going to make me say Hedo Turkoglu.
No. Best.
Who is their best? Tell me.
Okay, well, the names we discussed, Bismack Biyombo for that 1 year. Yeah.
That's tough.
Rondé for the social.
Oh, come
clips.
On, man. No, the Raptors.
Anthony Parker.
Yeah, I love Anthony Parker.
Way back in the
day. I love Anthony
Jorge Garbajosa.
Great pickups. Brian Colangelo had a very good first year here.
And that's it. He went downhill ever since.
And then he started flipping players. You know, we had Sean Marion here.
That's correct.
Jermaine O'Neal here.
Do you think anybody in Toronto has a Sean Marion Raptors jersey?
If anyone has one, it would be me. We know this. I had a Charlie Villanueva jersey back in the day.
All right.
No, but I get what you're saying. And I think that's the one thing I think maybe is difficult for maybe fans to accept too, is that even with the championship and even with everything that Masai and the organization have built here, Raptors still can't say that they are a free agency destination.
All right. That's fair enough. And look, I don't know why though, because Toronto is a world-class city, but it is what it is. Okay, let's end the show with two text messages that we got. First from Rick from Little Britain. Which of the following men is most important to the Raptors' success over the next 3 years? Pascal Siakam, Masai Ujiri, or Scotty Barnes?
Scotty Barnes.
More ahead of Masai?
I mean, is this when Chris Mannix put up the poll of, you know, Giannis or Brad Stevens? We know what Masai can do, but I would tend to want to focus on the court, though.
Okay, fair enough.
I would choose to focus on the court, so I'm eliminating Masai from this equation, and I'm going to say Scotty Barnes. I think, like you mentioned, if you want to find a franchise player, if you want to find someone who can, you know, push the team over the top, you find that in the draft, and you find that
but
at the top of the draft.
Who finds that? It's the top man, and I'm not talking about DT. I'm talking about Masai Ujiri.
Listen, I get it, but I'm going with Scotty Barnes.
I'm going with Masai. I still think that there's some key roster decisions that need to be made, and you need the top man to be the best in the league at doing that, and that's what Masai is. And then the other text that we got, also from Rick, but this time from Markham, I was watching the Wizards game the other night, and I was watching Precious partially, and I'm looking at that skill set, and I'm also realizing this is the same Rick that we took the call from. But
no, so
Rick is really enthusiastic about Precious, man.
Yeah, shows to Precious.
He texted
man.
Us and called us about Precious.
No, we're gonna start the Precious propaganda.
We are. What do you mean start? It's already happening. Precious needs to send Rick like a jersey or something, man. I mean, Markham is not far. He can hand deliver that thing himself.
Yeah, I'll drive my 2001 Honda Civic there.
Yeah. So, Alex, a show programming note: I will not be here next Monday. And I'll be back for the rest of the week, obviously opening week and everything like that. But I'll be unfortunately away for Monday. So what can we expect from the Alex Wong solo hour next Monday on Raptors Show?
It's just me and Alvin Williams, man.
Wow.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Damn. All right. Well, that does it for us today. You've been listening to the Raptors Show on SportsNet.ie, The Fan. We'll be here Monday to Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. And make sure you find the Raptors Show wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe to all our episodes. It'll be available on your podcast feeds. So thank you this week to our producer, Derek, and to everyone else behind the scenes who make our 2 to 3 p.m. show and the Raptors Reaction Podcast possible. Thank you to all our guests this week for making time to be part of the show, including Matt Devlin, Blake Murphy, Faisal Kamisa, Danielle Michaud, Amy Otterper, Savannah Hamilton, and to my co-host and producer, Alex Wong. I'm your host, Will Liu, and we'll talk to you on Monday.